All right. So last week, Kendra was talking to us about being fit for purpose. She thought it was a construction term. James corrected her and said it wasn't. But being fit for purpose, that God has created us for a purpose and that we are fit for it, that he is in us, and through that, we can do whatever he is destined for us to do, that we can do anything that he is fit for us to do. And it was such a good message. We're going to be kind of spinning off of that today. We're going to be talking about the promise, or what God has fit for us to do, vision and reconciliation. We'll be talking from Genesis 22 mostly, and that's part of the story of Abraham. Does everyone know who Abraham is? His name was Abram before. A little trivia for you there. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. All right. So if we run back about like five chapters into chapter 17, we have a little bit of lead up. God makes a covenant or a promise to Abram, and it calls him Abraham after this. And if we go to Genesis 17, I just got the verse up on. Nope, not that one. Sorry. There should be one that's Genesis. Yeah. He said, "This is my covenant with you, Abraham. You'll be the father of many nations. Your name will no longer be Abram, but Abraham, meaning that I'm making you the father of many nations. I'll make you a father of fathers. I'll make nations from you. Kings will issue from you. I'm establishing my covenant between me and you, a covenant that includes your descendants, a covenant that goes on and on and on, a covenant that commits me to be your God and the God of your descendants. And I'm giving you and your descendants this land where you're just now camping, this whole country of Canaan, to own forever, and I will be their God." So we've got this promise from God, this covenant or a promise, and Abraham has one kid at this point, because his wife couldn't have kids. So she's like, "Here, take my slave. Have a kid with her. And through her, I will have a child." Which is really messed, but it's the way things were done back then. And Abraham's like, "Well, I've already got a kid, so that's who these generations will be through. This is what this promise will be through." So we drop down a couple more verses, and God replies to that thought. Next slide. God said, "That's not what I mean. Your wife, Sarah, will have a baby, a son. Name him Isaac," which means laughter. "I will establish my covenant with him and his descendants, a covenant that lasts forever." So he's like, "No, you're going to have another kid through your actual wife. She's going to have a kid." He's like, "That's really weird, because I'm 100 years old and my wife's 90. And if anyone knows anything about biology, that's a little tough at that age." I'm just saying. Chapter 21, they end up having Isaac, and it's pretty sweet, but in Genesis 18, God even furthers the promise of Isaac and the generations to come. We have this verse: "Abraham is going to become a large and strong nation. All the nations of the world are going to find themselves blessed through him. Yes, I've settled on him as the one to train his children and future family to observe God's way of life, live kindly and generously and fairly, so that God can complete in Abraham what he promised him." And those are some pretty big promises. Like, as you know, the whole world will be blessed through you. There's another verse where he says that your descendants, you won't be able to number them. They'll be more than the stars in the sky or the grains of sand in the desert. Like, that's a lot. That's huge. And for a guy who's 100 years old and doesn't have a legitimate child, that's an even bigger promise. That's huge. So we had that word promise. We went through that. A promise is something that's said that's going to be done. And then Abraham had to latch on to a vision. The vision of that promise actually coming to pass. Because with a vision, you have to make steps to see it come to pass. You can't just sit there and say, "Yeah, it's going to happen down the road." I mean, I'm just saying, for them to have a kid, he had to walk through some steps, no matter how old he was. We don't talk about that very often in church, but it had to happen. And then 12 years later, they've got this 12-year-old son. He's becoming a man, and God asks him to do something crazy. We're going to read that passage in chapter 22 that James alluded to. After all of this, God tested Abraham. God said, Abraham, yes, he answered, I'm listening. He said, take your dear son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I'll point out to you. Abraham got up early in the morning and saddled his donkey. He took two of his young servants and his son Isaac. He had split wood for the burnt offering. He set out for the place God had directed him, and on the third day he looked up and saw the place in the distance. Abraham told his two young servants, stay here with the donkey. The boy and I are going over there to worship, and then we'll come back to you. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and gave it to Isaac his son to carry. He carried the flint and the knife. The two of them went off together. Isaac said to Abraham, his father, Father, yes, my son. We have flint and wood, but where's the sheep for the burnt offering? Abraham said, Son, God will see to it that there's a sheep for the burnt offering. And they kept on walking together. Next slide. They arrived at the place to which God had directed him. Abraham built an altar. He laid out the wood, and then he tied up Isaac and laid him on the wood. Abraham reached out and took the knife to kill his son. Just then an angel of God called him out of heaven. Abraham, Abraham, yes, I'm listening. Don't lay a hand on that boy. Don't touch him. Now I know how fearlessly you fear God. You didn't... Abraham looked up. He saw a ram caught by his horns in the thicket. Abraham took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. Abraham named that place God Yireh, or God sees to it. That's where we got the saying, on the mountain of God, he sees to it. The angel of God spoke from heaven a second time to Abraham. I swear, God's sure word, because you have gone through with this and have not refused to give me your son, your dear son, I'll bless you. Oh, how I'll bless you. And I'll make sure that your children flourish like stars in the sky and like sand on the beaches. And your descendants will defeat their enemies. All nations on earth will find themselves blessed through your descendants because you obeyed me. Abraham was asked by God to sacrifice his son, the child that God had promised to him two separate times, and through him had promised to be a father to the nations. Not just little promises, but even big promises. And we know that God's promises are never null and void, yet God asked him to give up what he was promised. And Abraham knew this. He knew that God's promises are never null and void, and he knew what the promise was, but he still trusted God's promise and did what was being asked of him, even if it sounded nuts. And it did. Like, it 100% crazy. So, like, can you imagine? God's like, hey, I'm going to give you this child, even though you're 100 years old and your wife's 90 and cannot bear children at this point in time in her life. She's going to have a kid through you. And 12 years later, he's like, oh, by the way, jokes. You need to sacrifice him on an altar by your own hand. Like, I kind of, and this promise that he had put all of his faith and hope and trust in, and God was asking him to give it up. It was nuts. What happens when God asks us to do something that doesn't look like we think it should? We always say, you know, God's ways are higher than our ways. It's a popular verse that we like to quote. But it's so much easier to say it than actually walk it out. So there's this word called reconciliation that needs to happen. Abraham had to go through this reconciliation. And so reconciliation is the action of making one view or belief compatible with another view or belief. When things don't line up, what do? We have to reconcile what we believe. when God says, your child Isaac, your descendant Isaac, is going to have many more children, and there's going to be a huge future through him. And then he says, but you got to kill him when he's 12 and hasn't had any children. How do you reconcile that? When God says both of those things, what happens? And that's where reconciliation comes in. But Abraham knew that God's word is never null and void, no matter what he's being asked to do looked like. He was willing to risk everything in faith because he was clinging to that promise. In the end, we find out that God intervenes and gives this sheep or ram or whatever to be sacrificed, and Isaac doesn't have to be killed, and everything's good. But Abraham didn't know that that was going to happen. So he had to believe something bigger than just, God's going to give me a sheep. In reality. Because you don't know that. You don't know what God's going to say. So he had to believe that probably, well actually it says in Hebrews 11, that he had to believe that God was going to bring Isaac back from the dead. Because he just had to. Isaac had to continue living some way or another, but he had to be obedient. And honestly, I can't imagine having that kind of faith in reality. I think Abraham's greatest quality in this is that he was able to see life through a different perspective, through a different lens. He was able to see life through God's eyes and trust that. We're so quick to think that we know what's best because we're in the thick of it or that we're on the edge of it. But whether you're, you know, halfway up the hill or right down in the mess of what's going on, there's always a perspective that's higher and sees further than whatever obstacles we see right in our way. And that's God's perspective. And you guys, you guys all have like Instagram or Facebook or whatever, so then you put a photo on Facebook nowadays and it's like, oh, you can change that photo by putting these filters on it. And you can make it look so much better than the photo your iPhone took. Right? That's what they tell you. Hashtag no filter. But, oh, James, you're cute. So, no.
You're not.
It's all right. But we tend to see life through that hashtag no filter, right? We take a photo and we're like, that's a good photo. But then we slap another filter on it, or we open a photo editing app, or we put it on Facebook, and Facebook's like, hey, you could change this some way or another. And then all of a sudden we see different things in the photo. Or have you ever taken one of, like, when I was in high school, there weren't, like, Instagram. Facebook wasn't a thing when I was in high school. Like, I know, I'm going to be 30 this summer. And but so we had MySpace, and MySpace was all about the edited photos, especially for someone who liked to listen to punk music, super scene kind of things going on. And so you'd take like this super emotionally sad looking photo, and then you'd like put a filter on it and then make it go grayscale, and then like change different things in the photo qualities, and all of a sudden you'd be looking at this face that's so distorted that it, but people thought it was cool, and you'd be picking out all these like weird little things that you wouldn't have ever noticed without the regular without the filters on. You'd be able to see things in a different light, as we say. But Abraham was in the same boat as us when we think that we know what's best. He could have just said, no, God, you're nuts. I know what's going on. You already said that Isaac's going to have kids, and there's going to be generations and generations going through him. So obviously, you're the crazy one. But he decided to take a step back and say, no, God, you know what's best. I choose to look through the lens of who you are. I choose to look through that God filter, through that, and see that no matter what the obstacles I see are, that the landscape changes, that the photo changes, the picture changes when I'm looking through what you see, God. That those obstacles, there's something else beyond that that I can't see. Does that make sense? He had to use this crazy God filter for a promise of a son, because let's be honest, 90 and 100-year-old people don't have children these days. They didn't back then either. So he had to use that filter, say, okay, God, I trust you. I choose to see life through your eyes, because I'm going to have a son because you said so. He had to use that filter to see the promise of a home. God promised him and his descendants the land of Canaan. He was living in tents in that land. Isaac and Jacob and his descendants didn't live there for years. They had to wander through the desert. They had to overthrow so many people to be able to take over that land. And they still struggle for it in reality. He had the promise of the world being blessed through his descendants. Sometimes we just see that as the Jewish population, being blessed through the Jewish population. But when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, that verse is about Jesus, being blessed through Jesus. And then he had the promise of completion as well. And that's the cross. And he didn't even know what most of that looked like. And he had to cling on to this promise. He had to keep looking through that God filter, even through the trial of having to be willing to kill his son, to sacrifice to God. So my question to you today is, what has God promised to you? Do you know what they are? Do you know what those promises are? A lot of us probably don't. Sometimes we just have to stop and take time and talk to God about what those promises are. Sometimes we have to dig into the Word and find out what God has promised to his people in general before we even know what he's spoken into our lives personally. But like Kendra said last week, we're all fit for purpose. He's all promised things to each and every one of us from the day that we were born. And some of us walk without knowing what they are. But even when we do know what those promises are, there's going to be times when those promises don't look like they're going to be possible. There's going to be times when God asks us to do things that look like we're going to end up having to kill that promise. It's going to look like that promise doesn't have a future sometimes. It happened to Abraham, and it'll happen to all of us. But there's a unique quality of grit to set your eyes on the promise, even if it looks like it's going to die. To be willing to be obedient, even when it looks rough. And Abraham only saw one of those promises that I talked to you about. He only saw one of them come to pass. The promise of a son. But there's four more promises in there beyond that. Are we willing to be that obedient? Even if our lens isn't seeing the way things the way that God does? What if we don't see that promise come to pass? What if the next generation doesn't either? What if we were given that promise just to be a platform for that promise to be built on. That it's not going to look like what we think it's supposed to look like. How do we do that? There's my favorite chapter in the Bible, actually. It's Hebrews 11, and it talks about faith and the heroes of the faith. And it talks about Abraham and his story a lot in there. But it goes through all of these people in the Old Testament that were willing to take risks and do things even when it didn't look like it was going to happen the way that they thought it should. And then at the end of it, it talks a little bit more. It says, not one of these people, even though their lives of faith were exemplary, got their hands on what was promised. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith would come together and make one completed whole, their lives of faith not complete apart from ours. Do you see what this means? All of these pioneers who blazed the way, all of these veterans, they're cheering us on. It means we've better get on with it. Strip down, start running, and never quit. No extra spiritual fat, no parasitic sins. I love the message. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed. That exhilarating finish in and with God, he could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in the place of honor right alongside God. When you find yourselves flagging in your faith, go over that story again, item by item. That long litany of hostility he plowed through, that will shoot adrenaline into your souls. Sometimes what we have to do is choose to ask God to show his perspective, or choose to say, I know that my perspective's not lining up with yours, that my faith isn't reconciling with what you're saying, God, but I choose to move myself in line with what you're saying, no matter what it looks like. Sometimes we just have to buckle down. Sometimes we just have to press in. Always we have to keep our eyes on Jesus and looking through that Jesus filter. It helps if we find people that have learned to see life through God's lens. Totally. They say that you become like the five people that you spend the most time with. So choose people that you know are looking through that God lens, that are choosing to look beyond that. Not even knowing who we were in this room today, Abraham set his eyes on the promise so that we could be here. He set his eyes on the promise so that his faith and our faith could come together and both point towards Jesus. Without even knowing how it would turn out, promise in hand, he continually pointed to Jesus thousands of years in the future. The promise of Jesus and the cross, that he didn't even know what it was going to look like. That's what he was pointing towards. That's what his life was pointing towards. And that's what we get to do too, no matter what it looks like. James, you want to come play a song? And I'd just like to pray for you guys, if you want to stand and worship with James. And there's a couple things I'd like us to pray about today. One of them, you can put your hand up for it if you want, but if you don't know what you are fit for purpose for, if you've been struggling with that, we'd love to pray for you. And if you know what the promise is, but you feel like you're hitting roadblocks, and you feel like you need a change in perspective, we'd love to pray for you for that too. And if you're dealing with fear to step into that promise that's already been said, that you've heard, but you're not sure whether you have the guts to do it, we'd love to pray for you too. So if any of those three things stuck a chord in you or spoke to you, we'd Just put your hand up a little bit. No one's looking. All right. And we're going to pray for you right now. God, I thank you for every person in this room, that every person that has stepped through these doors this morning is fit for purpose, that you have designed them to be fit for purpose. God, I thank you that through that purpose, you have given them promises, that you have spoken things into their spirit and into their lives, that you have a future for them. And it's all going to point back to you. So God, we just speak into their spirits boldness to take those steps to go towards what you have said their purpose is, what you have said your promises are in their lives. And if they haven't heard that promise yet, God, I pray that you'll come to them in dreams and visions and in their heart, that you'll awaken that purpose, you'll awaken those promises, that they will hear them loud and clear. God, I pray that... Oh, God, I pray that we will have the boldness to step out in our purpose. The boldness to be obedient when we see the roadblocks, that we'll have the boldness to reconcile what we believe and what your promises are with what's going on. God, I pray for boldness for us to reconcile our faith. And I thank you, God, that your ways are higher than our ways, that your thoughts are higher than our thoughts. So, God, I pray that as we walk out these doors today, that we'll have a firm settling in our spirits, that your filter is the only filter we need to see life through. That no matter what's going on around us, to the right or left, in front, behind, that we can see it with your eyes, God. That we can see life through this God filter, that we can set our eyes on you and through you and reconcile that what's naturally going on isn't what's necessarily supernaturally going on, and that we'll have the boldness to step out in faith in all of those moments. Thank you, Lord.